Everybody, Jimmy Smith on today's Unlocking the Cage podcast. I sit down for an interview with Aaron Bronstetter to talk about UFC 268 and hilarious fake Michael Chandlerisms. We can't get enough of them. And is Dana White right making Nate Diaz fight Khamzat Chimaev in his last fight under contract? Aaron Bronstetter from TSN Sports. So glad to have your knowledge with us. How you doing, Aaron?
The most interesting and the best of the best. I mean, can I ask for a better introduction than that, Jimmy?
You cannot. And KOB made it just for you. Is Aaron Bronstetter coming on? Oh, my God. Let me make a new intro. I think that one's fitting. I think it is. So, Aaron, my first question for you. We were discussing Weili Zhang and her, let's be honest, laundry list of excuses last time out about her loss to Rose Namajunas. Do you see her having, I guess, righted the ship, mentally speaking? Do you think she's 100% focused on this rematch from what you're seeing?
Well, let me ask you something, Jimmy, because you've been in there before, and of course, you're an analyst for, have been an analyst for various mixed martial arts promotions. I feel like the only excuse she needs to have is that she had a tell. She shook her hips, and that was something that she had done many times in terms of feinting the leg kick. And then, like Hillary Clinton says, when they go low, you go high. And that's what Rose Namajunas did.
Exactly. I mean, she made a tactical mistake. She made a tactical mistake for sure. But with my experience having been in there too, what I got to say is I've never heard a fighter give a lot of excuses and go in better. The next fight is almost never better. When I looked at, for example, when you look at Deontay Wilder, all the reasons that I lost to Tyson Fury, goes in their third fight, gets knocked out anyway. Almost never is there a better performance unless you have a sober observation of your last fight. Do you believe she has that deep down?
Is your argument that we should wholly ignore the co-main and main event where both of those individuals that are the challenger have made countless excuses regarding their last fight?
I have selective vision about anything I want, Aaron. Right now, I'm focusing on Weili Zhang. Trust me, we'll get to everything else in a second.
Okay, yeah, well, I mean, listen, Weili Zhang has changed her camp. She's training now with, she does have her original trainer who's come with her to the Arizona area where she's going to be facing the state of Arizona, rather, where she's been training with Eddie Cha, who's a phenomenal coach. Used to be one of the coaches with John Crouch's team at the MMA Lab, has kind of branched out on his own to start fight ready. And you got Henry Cejudo there, and you got a lot of different fighters that are going to give her different looks. And she actually says this is the first time that she's trained with a female training partner is heading to this fight. And she said it was amazing to her how light she felt when she was able to grapple with a female training partner. So, listen, I mean, the first fight, could it have been an anomaly? Maybe she knows what the tell was. You actually saw them on, I think it was UFC Countdown with Cejudo kind of walking her through what she did wrong. I think that Zhang Weili has a ton of physicality that could give Rose Namajunas problems. But here's the thing. Wherever this fight goes, I think that Namajunas has potentially the advantage. I think Namajunas has shown she's got a better finishing ability when it's on the feet. And on the ground, she's going to throw a lot of different submission looks at Zhang Weili that she probably has never seen before if it does get there. So it's interesting to me that Rose is an underdog in this fight, because I think that if you're looking at who has more ways to win, not to mention who won the last fight, all signs are kind of pointing to that side.
Very, very true. Speaking to Aaron Bronstetter from TSN Sports. Now let's shift gears a little bit and talk about what is, to a lot of people, the people's main event. Now opening the main card, Justin Gaethje versus Michael Chandler. Similar styles, but a little bit more ring intelligence from Justin Gaethje, as we've seen in recent fights. Do you think that might be the difference in this one? When you see X's and O's, what is the difference to you between these two fighters?
Well, I think the big difference is the chin. I think that we've seen Chandler's chin fail him in the past, whereas with Gaethje, it seems like the only time where his chin has failed him is when basically you're taking a peg and you're hammering it and hammering it and hammering it until it finally gets into the ground. Justin Gaethje's got a granite chin. He's been in these wars with guys like Dustin Poirier, Eddie Alvarez, and, of course, a lot of other action fighters that could greatly diminish his ability to take a shot. However, in recent fights, he's been fighting a lot smarter, and he's been able to utilize his power in a way where he's not getting into these firefights. He's just able to land the more precise shot. And I think if he touches Chandler with one of those shots, I think it's lights out. But on the flip side of that, we saw Gaethje's defensive wrestling get exploited in the Khabib fight. Now, it's two different styles of wrestling that Khabib brings to the table, whereas Chandler's going to bring the D1 wrestling looks that Gaethje has seen for all these years. which may, you know, Gaethje may be able to offset. But I do think that if you're Michael Chandler, you might want to try to find an opening there rather than get it into a firefight where, again, I just think that Chandler's chin has failed him more often than Gaethje's has.
It's very interesting. And I've called a lot of Chandler's fights, of course, and he's in Bellator. And I said during the Benson Henderson fight, I said, man, Mike just has trouble with his pacing. He exploded in round one. He was on fire in round two. Round three, he started failing. By round five, he was lucky to be standing on his feet. He just has a tendency in fights to have trouble with his pacing. Well, the next fight, Mike comes up to me and he goes, man, you know, you say I have trouble with my pacing. It's just that I set such a pace that no one in the world could keep up with it. And I went, yeah, that's pacing. I'm not saying you don't have energy. I'm saying you spend it at the wrong time. Do you think that might be a factor in this fight?
Not in a three-round fight. I think that over the course of three rounds, we're going to see, you know, Michael Chandler be able to go the distance without exhausting himself. But, you know, I actually think it works to Chandler's advantage that this is a three-round fight. Because if this starts getting to later rounds, championship rounds, I think Gaethje has shown that he can hang for that amount of time and still look good. We haven't really seen Gaethje go into the later rounds in his recent fights, but I do think that over the course of three rounds, that actually works in the favor of Michael Chandler, because I think that he can win the first two rounds of this fight if he is able to utilize a good strategy against Gaethje. Do I think it's likely? No, not really, but I do think that it is a possibility and that could be his best way to win.
Speaking, of course, to Aaron Bronstetter from TSN Sports. Now, in the main event, Colby Covington, Kamaru Usman, we talk about excuses. There were a lot of them from Colby Covington about an early stoppage and all the stuff that I think is absolutely ridiculous. I think it may have been a little early, but certainly not the robbery he talked about. Heading into this fight against Colby Covington, who right now second to GSP, to some people, he might be number one or in GSP territory. What can Colby Covington do to have a different outcome this time around?
Well, I think what makes this fight so intriguing is that we're going to get different versions of these guys. You know, both of these guys have dramatically changed their situation since the first fight. Usman moving to Denver, and it seems like that's really helped him with his striking, at least in terms of his precision striking. I think that has been the big key. And I think that could be a problem for Covington. But then, on the flip side of that, we've seen Covington fight once since this Usman fight. He's training with a brand-new camp that I think are going to teach him a lot of new things. And I just don't know what these guys are going to look like coming into this one, because I know both these guys are the two best welterweights in the world, in my opinion. I think that Covington looked great in the early rounds of that fight. One of the judges actually had all three rounds, I think, for Covington heading into the fourth. Which was surprising to me. But at the same time, I do think that Covington, and that was a close fight. Like, I can't say it was too surprising. I thought that those rounds were all very close in the first fight. I think that Covington is being overlooked a little bit here because of the recent success we've seen of Usman since their last fight. And I think that, if you look at the betting line, which kind of gives you an indication of how the public is looking at this, you know, Usman's like a minus 350, minus 300. Like, he's a much bigger favorite this time around than he was last time. And I think that a lot of people are just forgetting how good Colby Covington is, because his win against Woodley hasn't aged well. Since then, we saw what happened with Woodley when he fought Vicente Luque and Jake Paul, for that matter. So I just think that a lot of people are forgetting just how good Colby Covington is. And if he's learning new things under a new training camp, I think he's going to be a very dangerous opponent, like he would in any situation, really, for Usman. But this is what makes the fight so intriguing to me. I don't really know how this one's going to look.
Speaking to Aaron Bronstetter, TSN Sports, when I looked at the card yesterday, I had a good debate, had some good calls about who has the most to lose on the main card, right? It's a title rematch in the co-main and the main. Of course, Michael Chandler versus Justin Gaethje. Who do you think, looking at it, has the most to lose when it comes to this card? Who is most devastated by a loss, in your opinion?
Well, this is kind of going to be a weird answer, and I'm sure you'll like it for that reason, but Frankie Edgar has a lot to lose here. Yeah. It's kind of a weird thing to say, but this is the end of his career right now. Like, this is kind of the twilight of his career, and he's been able to beat guys like Marlon Vera throughout his entire career whenever he's faced with guys that are not in the top three of a division. He's been able to really handle them, and I think we're really going to get a sense of where Frankie Edgar's at in this fight against Marlon Vera. And I think Vera's favored in this one. I'm not sure if he should be, because I think Frankie Edgar can beat Marlon Vera in this situation. I think that if we see even a shade of the Frankie Edgar that we've seen in the past, he should be able to beat Marlon Vera. But if he loses this fight, now what? Like, you're not going to be in like the top 10 of the bantamweight division. I just don't know what would be left for Frankie Edgar to do in this sport if he's not going to get another crack at any sort of title or be in the mix.
Another story that is kind of making the rounds, of course, Dana White asked about it during media day, Khamzat Chimaev versus Nate Diaz. I'm on record saying I would believe he would climb Mount Everest before Nate Diaz would accept the fight with Khamzat Chimaev. It's bad on every level. It's a gigantic 170-pounder. He's a wrestling guy, which has always been a problem for Nate Diaz. His style is not a striking style at all. He takes you down, crushes you, and ground and pounds you, then takes you out. What are your thoughts on this fight and whether or not it gets made?
Well, I couldn't tell you whether or not it gets made. I think that's going to be up to the Diaz camp, frankly. I don't think that Chimaev is going to turn that one down. I understand the thinking behind it. I think that a lot of people believe that this is, you know, meant to be a squash fight or something along those lines. But we've seen this in the promotion game before. If you take a star and you put him against another star, whoever comes out on top kind of steals a lot of that shine. Nate Diaz, it's the last fight on his contract. You know, Dana White can spin this one how he wants to, and it seems like the spin is basically that, you know, if you're in the UFC, you need to be prepared to fight the big guys and the best guys out there. And frankly, if Nate Diaz is somehow able to pull this one off and goes into free agency, imagine how much money this guy could be making. Now, I personally believe if they do make this fight, Chimaev will be at least a minus 500 favorite. I think the odds would be strongly against Nate Diaz in this one. And I just think that it would be a way for them to build up Chimaev. But I don't know what it does. I know that it will grow the star of Chimaev, but in terms of fighting top opposition and proving that he can get into the title mix, I'm not sure if this is a step backwards for him in that sense. Like, wouldn't you rather see him face a Gilbert Burns or a Luque or somebody that's kind of at the top of the division to see where he's at? Or is it too much too soon if they do that? It's kind of a mixed bag of things that you can do with Chimaev right now. But all I know is that when he had Li Jianglang up in the air at the very start of that fight, it was very similar to when you see Ronda Rousey lock in an armbar. You're like, this is over. Like, did you have that same thought when you watched it? Because I know that he had a year layoff. I kind of wanted to take a wait-and-see approach with him and see how he'd look in that fight. But as soon as he had him off the ground and dumped him down, it just, to me, I thought the fight was over.
Rarely in a fight at the elite level, especially someone with a long time off, do you get that sense of inevitability, right? I immediately had a sense of inevitability, where I don't know when in this round it's going to happen, but it's going to happen in this round. And I haven't experienced that a lot. That sense that Chimaev brings, much like Khabib, I would say Islam Makhachev is starting to get that sense of, I'm going to win, it's just a matter of how. And that's how I felt about Chimaev. Is that fair or not?
Yeah, and that's why I think they love this guy, because you take all of these different things that the stars of the sport have had brought to the table. You've got kind of the trash talk of Khabib, and not to mention the kind of him being from Russia and having that kind of, you know, I'll smash you attitude that people have come to love about Khabib. And you pair that with, like I said, kind of that Ronda Rousey factor, the Francis Ngannou factor, where it's like as soon as the first round starts, you're like, how long is this fight going to last? And is this guy going to take any damage whatsoever? Because the guy has absorbed one significant strike in his first four fights in the UFC, and that is just absurd to think about. I mean, if you look at Francis Ngannou, I mean, he was absorbing strikes early in his career. But I just think it's unbelievable what this guy's been able to do against UFC-caliber opposition.
Well, Aaron, thank you so much for your time. I know you'll be there this weekend. Enjoy the fights, man. Appreciate you as always.
Hey, same, Jimmy. I'm always happy to do it, and I love speaking with you.
Busted Open is your daily home for all things pro wrestling. Join Dave LaGreca, WWE Hall of Famers Bully Ray and Mark Henry, and hardcore wrestling legend Tommy Dreamer.
Dave LaGreca here. From WWE to AEW, Impact, New Japan, Ring of Honor, and more, we talk it all. Whether you grew up watching Ric Flair or Stone Cold Steve Austin, Busted Open is your place for pro wrestling.
Busted Open, Mondays through Saturdays at 9 a.m. East on Fight Nation, Sirius XM Channel 156.
So, KOB, you've been laughing all day about some made-up quotes from Michael Chandler before his fight against Justin Gaethje.
I saw this on Twitter earlier today, and I just thought they were hilarious. So, UFC, obviously, for the event, is doing their embeddeds as usual. And apparently, people have noticed a trend of just Michael Chandler making Michael Chandler statements. Like, none of them are that crazy, but always, like, you know, about the spirit of competition and his mental mindset and all this
deep
type of stuff.
Philosophical, deep thoughts with Michael Chandler, right?
So there's become this trend now of people making up like Michael Chandler quotes in response to like everyday activities.
So this has led to a cottage industry of fake Michael Chandler quotes that I'm not kidding. Kelly, back me up. KOB has been reading them all show and laughing so hard it's hard to do the show. Like, I'm trying not to look
every time I've looked up at the video, I see Mike, like, giggling, and I knew exactly what was going on.
All right, so KOB.
So, these have been a combination of stuff. 90% of this is from the comments on these embedded videos, like, on YouTube.
Right.
Some of them are from Twitter, but, like, I would say 90 to 95% are from the YouTube comment section. So, like, here's an example. Chandler, choice, whether it's number one or number two. What makes you think the universe will reward you for choosing either? Sometimes you got to take a risk, and if it fails, you learn from it. I know I did. Sir, this is McDonald's. Can I please take your order? And it's just one after another, and it's just fantastic.
Hit us with some classics, man. Go ahead. Got to keep it going here.
Michael Chandler at his friend's funeral. Listen. Everything he's done for me as a person and as a friend puts me in a better position to challenge for UFC gold. I believe another win against top five puts me in title contention.
Oh, my God. These are absolutely great.
Not since the whole GSP's dark side has MMA Twitter or the MMA community been so funny and so creative with the stuff that they're coming up with, because some of these are very, very intense and extensive.
You know, another one that I liked, that I thought was hilarious, was the Tony Ferguson, the type of guy. Those were really good, right?
All of those were great. So here's another one. Michael Chandler's girlfriend. I'm home alone, baby. Chandler. No one is alone, sweetheart. God is with us, and we are graced by his gifts and blessings bestowed upon us by him. Loneliness is a gift given to be utilized for self-improvement and manifestation, my love.
Oh, now I've spent... All right, before we get back to... Because there are a ton, and we're going to read them all. When I had experience, obviously, with Michael Chandler and Bellator, I interviewed him a lot. He fought a lot in Bellator. And... He does kind of say stuff like this. He's just that guy. He does kind of talk like this. He is really religious, so he tends to be kind of philosophical about God and Jesus and power and all that stuff. We were talking yesterday how it's endlessly frustrating for KOB that I'm not active on social media. One of the reasons I'm not active on social media is I'm not easily inspired. And everyone's always trying to inspire you all the time as if I care or that will somehow change my life. But I think Chandler's just one of those guys. So I'm going to read some because I think they're kind of funny. Random guy, can I bother you? Michael Chandler. I'd love for you to bother me. It strengthens my ability to sustain daily struggles. A constant battle each and every selfie, each and every photo tagging me on Instagram. I'm staring into an endless reflection of hard work and determination.
Like, they're so good.
They're so good. Kel, I know you're reading them right now, so you got to hit us with one. Come on.
I got to find my favorite. Hold on. Because Michael Chandler bothers me. Like, honestly. He seems like this great, genuine guy. But, like, things like this seem so not genuine.
So cheesy and so forced and so. Yeah. And in my experience, by the way, Michael Chandler's a nice guy. In my experience. I know guys that act like this and are D-bags behind the scenes. Mike's really not in my experience. I don't know him that personally. But yeah, these do seem really contrived and forced and all this stuff. So is it just because you're a Gaethje fan that he bothers you?
No. Since he beat Dan Hooker, I think
Dan Hooker's
was,
first
when
one
he
the
did
SC,
the whole post-fight interview and was like, Khabib's going to be like 30 and Chandler, like, come and beat me if you can. And I was like, this is so pro wrestling. Like, stop speaking to me.
It's a little too well thought out, right?
It's too much, yeah. And all of the, like, inspirational quotes, like, I'm just
worst.
Oh, my God.
So,
like,
you know what? It's
stop
funny because I know what Kelly's talking about because I had the same thing with Ben Rothwell when he did the whole fake laugh at the end of a promo. And I was like, I'm done with you now, pal. Like, I'm over that. But, like, the difference between me and Kelly on Chandler is I can let a little bit more with Chandler go. Like, I can let that promo go because I watched him in Bellator and was always amazed by his fights. And just, I always say Michael Chandler, when he weighs it, I'm like, those were the days, like, it reminds me of like when I used to wrestle and you'd look at the guy you were going to face on the scale and you're like, oh, I got a day ahead of me. Like, this one's not going to be easy. I think it every single time, and I saw Chandler's glory days in Bellator, so I let him get away with a little bit more, but I get what Kelly's talking about, that the promo just completely turned her off to him.
All right, let's get another one while we're here. Embedded. Okay, Chandler, do some shadow boxing for us. Chandler, we box in the shadows because we're scared to show our true selves in the light. We need to come out of the shadows and show the world what's inside of us. That's the only way we progress in life and realize our true potential.
See, I like that one. I love this one. Cat walks across the road. Michael Chandler. My whole journey since the beginning has been like this cat, walking in the silence, all alone in the dark. It's all about what you do by yourself and not what you do when people are around. That's how I'm always motivated.
All right, come on, Kel. Come on, there's got to be one that you like, because there are a ton of them.
Okay, this is a good one. Embedded, how was your day? Michael Chandler, what I do in a day is not definitive of who I am. It's what I do in days that are dark that forge me to be the machine that will unleash inside that octagon on Saturday. Which I genuinely had to think back if he did say that on
Yeah, no, that sounds like something he would say, good. Right?
Yeah.
They're so over the top yet so spot on at the same time. And that's crazy, you know?
I was telling you guys on the show call, I did see like a Michael Chandler meme of this sorts where it was like, Michael Chandler is the type of guy that will give you a pep talk into getting your ex-girlfriend back that left you for him.
I generally hate stuff like this. I just hate it because, you know, I think, you know, it's one of the things about social media these days is people act like they need to influence and inspire other people all the time. And that's just dumb to me. I just hate that stuff. It's stupid. I don't remember the last time I read any of these dumb things and went and thought they were profound. Right. And like in anything that says, read it again. I can read English. I don't need to read it again. I got it the first time around. I think all that stuff is incredibly stupid. KOB, you just came across one.
Yeah. Someone. Good morning. Michael Chandler. There are no bad mornings. Each morning is a gift from God, whose sublime sanctuary does not have a specific location, but is everywhere.
Embedded. Mike, how did you prepare for the... It all started when I fought my way through my mom's birth canal. It was tight, hot, and when I saw the light, some dude in white smacked me over and over. It was a rough first fight. I cried, but I picked myself up. I was born a fighter. I overcame this and all other challenges, working harder every day to seek destiny and greatness in the universe. Bam! Oh.
Paint dries. Michael Chandler. The drying paint is a manifestation of patience and dedication, no matter how mundane the task at hand may seem. I am grateful for every opportunity and put my mind into everything with the sole belief that the sky is the limit. My patience and dedication are the strongest tools in my toolbox.
Will these get better or worse if he wins?
I don't know how they get better. I don't know how they get better because people are doing it outstanding. I am so proud of the MMA community for once.
They're extremely spot on already. Like, extremely.
Does it make you want to see him get knocked out more or what, Kel? I know you do anyway because you're a Justin Gaethje mark 100%, but when he says stuff like this, like, God, I hope they rearrange his face.
No, I mean, it doesn't make me want him to get knocked out more. Do I find it really annoying when I just think when anybody speaks like that, not just Michael Chandler, I'm like, just shut up. Stop talking. Your inspiration isn't of any to me.
Wow. Chandler at a funeral. The world's going to try to put you in a box, throw dirt on you. It's your job to break free and brush off the dirt.
Jimmy, I think this was the one that, like, when you saw me, like, crying laughing, this was the one because it was just so detailed. So, embedded. Who's your biggest motivation? Chandler. You know, when James Polk became president of the USA, he promised the people of America all the land from coast to coast in just one term. This is called manifest destiny. He did exactly what he said he would do, and he had to go through war with Mexico to achieve this destiny. That's how I see my journey to the UFC championship. I'm ready to go to true war to achieve what I manifest for myself. My destiny is to be the greatest in the world.
Oh,
like, how do people, like, go that crazy
so
and extensive
good.
With it?
Oh, my God. These are all awesome. Oh, my God. All right. Michael Chandler, after having sex, put in another session of cardio, working hard every day to put myself one step above the rest. I will hopefully soon be the new UFC champion and become one of the greatest who have ever existed. That's great. Oh, these are awesome. By the way, send them in if you can. Catch us, obviously, on them Twitters, on them internets, right? MMA on Sirius XM. If you have some favorites, do you find these? Send them along. Hopefully we get them on air because these are absolutely great. Oh, my God. I think, like, the Tony Ferguson, you know, be the kind of guy that does whatever. Those were good. They weren't as good as these. Because these are just so detailed and they're so accurate. It's crazy.
See, my favorite was still the GSP dark side stuff. Because I thought those were...
Yeah.
I think what was it? Going into Nick Diaz? Like, no one knows how dark my mind really is.
Right.
And people were, like, tweeting stuff like... George St. Pierre showers and goes outside, doesn't dry hair. Hashtag George GSP's dark side.
Right. And the funny thing about that was he was the nicest guy ever who seemed to have absolutely no dark side at all. So that was the funny part of that. Chandler keeps doing stuff like this. You know, Chandler just keeps going at it like this. And it's, oh my, it's tough because you start thinking about what you're doing. You start thinking about what you're saying. It's not going to work out. KOB's laughing again.
Embedded. How's the food? Chandler. It's hot, but you know me, I'm used to this. Training in the heat is where I find my happiness. It's a battle it's a battle from the time you wake up to the time you fall asleep. Like Atlas once said, we train in the heat. We live in the heat. It's all up here. You got to be mentally strong for these moments. Like,
God.
They're so good.
They are so good. It's absolutely ridiculous.
This is Lindsay Rhodes, and I'm so excited for my podcast, The NFL Roadshow, to be joining the SiriusXM sports family. We'll be talking about the most compelling topics and to some of the most interesting people in and around the NFL, taking a look at things through my somewhat nerdy football lens. I like to push past the low-hanging fruit to get to the real stories that are going to make you feel like a smarter football fan. So please join me every Wednesday for The NFL Roadshow, available on the SXM app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Dana White has said he would like to have Khamzat Chimaev face Nate Diaz for Chimaev's next fight. Now, I have been vocal, as I just was with Aaron Bronstetter, thank you so much for calling in, that I don't believe Nate Diaz takes his fight. I believe Nate Diaz would take any fight in the world other than Khamzat Chimaev. He has, as opposed to a lot of fighters on the roster for the UFC, the option to say no a lot. He just does. Apparently, financially, he's doing all right. He's got his own weed strain. I have yet to try it out. KOB, have you? No? Yes? Am I going too personal here? No, you haven't? You haven't? All right, I have not either. I should go out to Stockton and check it out and see if it's any good. But he's apparently doing okay in the weed business. Apparently has some things going on that's going pretty well. He doesn't have to take a fight that he doesn't want to take. So I don't think he takes it for those reasons. So the people who feel he's trying to, quote, devalue Nate Diaz for having him fight his last fight against Khamzat Chimaev, they don't know what they're talking about. So this is from an interview with Robbie Fox, a guy who has called into my show as well, from My Mom's Basement podcast, about how those people are wrong, but I think he's defending himself from something he doesn't need to defend himself from. I'll explain afterward, but this is Dana on how much he loves Nate Diaz.
This isn't a diss. I love Nate Diaz. I love Nick and Nate as much as anybody else does. You get to a point, all of us in life and in your professional career in sports, where you get, you know, to a point where it's like, can I hang here anymore? Can I hang here anymore?
You think Nate's at that point?
I don't know.
I feel like there's matchups out there for him that maybe are less daunting than this one, and I see what people are saying.
Is that what we're looking for? Point. So is that are we looking for less daunting fights in the UFC? Is that what we're looking to do?
I guess not.
Yeah, that's just all bullshit.
That
the guy's
crazy.
Had four fights in the UFC.
They're saying the only reason you're giving it to him is because the last fight on his contract, they're saying you want to devalue him.
Devalue him?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's the last fight on his contract.
That's what the online chatter's saying.
Does everybody know he just lost his last fight?
He lost his last two fights. He lost to Leon Edwards. He lost to Jorge Masvidal. Lost to Conor McGregor. He lost three out of his last four. So I will take this in totality, right? I will let Dana White say his piece, and then I'll respond to the different parts of what he's saying. I agree with some of them. I disagree with other parts, and I totally support him about this decision. So there are three ways to see it. I'll break them all down. But this is about people just not knowing what they're talking about. Let's hear it, Dana.
By the end of that fight, though, you know.
How are you going to devalue him?
It's And it's funny because Nate Diaz is a fighter who, like his last fight showed, he could lose a fight and not be devalued.
What if he loses?
His stock might have went up after the Leon Edwards
fight. Somebody else we match him up with.
Yeah.
Would he be devalued?
I guess so.
How does Khamzat Chimaev devalue him?
Yeah.
You know how massive that fight? So here's the moral of the story. All these people are fucking morons and have no idea what they're talking about. I actually run the biggest fucking combat sports business on planet fucking Earth. So shut the fuck up and let me do my job.
All right. So to answer some questions here, all right, let's break this down a little bit. Yes, he's right. Nate lost his last fight, lost the fight before that. As I just said, he's lost three out of his last four. It doesn't really seem to affect Nate very much. So when Dana says, how am I going to devalue the guy? He loses and nobody cares. He loses and everybody wants to see him. He loses and the fans still go nuts for the guy. How can I devalue Nate Diaz? How does a loss to Khamzat Chimaev devalue him when losing to Leon Edwards didn't do it? Losing to Jorge Masvidal, which was an ass-whooping, didn't see that devalue him at all. So, I get what he's saying. It's true. It seems like Nate Diaz and Nick, to some degree, I'd say both of them, defy MMA gravity, right? They lose and nobody cares. They lose, they're just as popular. Nate Diaz quit and is just as popular as ever. So, I definitely see that point of it. So how does a Khamzat Chimaev loss devalue him? I think a Khamzat Chimaev loss is an ass-whooping. Ass-whooping. Now, you could argue that the Jorge Masvidal fight was an ass-whooping as well, and that Diaz fans are just kind of clung on to the fact that it was a cut stoppage, and they don't see that as legitimate. Chimaev, I think, is the worst possible style matchup for Nate Diaz. It's the worst possible one. So not only does he lose, and to Dana White's point, losing really doesn't mean a whole lot to Nate Diaz. It's one-sided. It doesn't look good. It's ugly. It makes him look really bad, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it's true. It isn't just a loss. I think he loses, and he looks terrible against Khamzat Chimaev. He gets manhandled. Manhandled against Khamzat Chimaev. So could it be that a loss doesn't mean anything? Sure. But does an out one-sided ass whooping, which I think he does get against Khamzat Chimaev, does that mean anything? I think there is something to that. Kelly, where do you fall on this side of the fence? Where Dana's saying a loss doesn't mean anything to Nate Diaz. I do agree with that. He's not wrong. So how does Khamzat Chimaev devalue him? Because it looks really bad. I think that's more than a loss. I think it's a one-sided ass-whooping that may make him look bad, right? Which side of that argument do you favor as a fan, Kelly? That doesn't matter if he loses, he loses. Or if he does get Li Jinglonged and looks that bad, it does devalue him a bit. Yes or no?
Yeah, I think so. Because like you said, your standard loss doesn't hurt the Diaz brothers. It doesn't matter. They usually have that. They leave the door cracked just enough for fans to question it, and fans will always question it. If he gets his ass kicked by Chimaev, yeah, I do think that makes him look bad. Do I think it devalues him completely? No. But do I think he does lose a bit of value? Yeah, I do. But again, it's a win-win for Dana. It's a big fight because obviously everyone's interested in Khamzat Chimaev right now. You said it on Tuesday. The everyday person that doesn't know the kind of, you know, average fighters knows and was talking about Chimaev after the weekend. Everybody knows Nate Diaz. So obviously a fight between the two of them is huge. And if Nate loses, he hits the free agency market of lesser value than he would have been. So it's a win-win for Dana.
Here's what I'm going to say. Whenever I have been critical of Dana White, one thing I'm generally not critical of is his business sense. And the way I see it, honestly, sending Nate Diaz off with a loss to Khamzat Chimaev that even doesn't devalue Nate that much. It devalues him a little bit. He's lost three in a row at that point, assuming he took the fight and lost. He would have lost three in a row. It does hurt his negotiating ability a bit, and it bumps up Khamzat Chimaev. Why? I don't know. I am a fan of the Diaz brothers. I really am. I really like them. They're super fun to watch. But people have this idea that a win over a Diaz brother somehow makes you more relevant. If I'm Khamzat Chimaev, that's comparatively easy money. It's a great style matchup. The guy's not a natural 170, but doesn't do a whole lot for his ranking, right? He beats a puffed-up 155-pounder who's a striking specialist. Great jiu-jitsu. He's not going to catch Khamzat Chimaev, okay? It's just not going to happen. So I am of the opinion that it doesn't really do anything for Khamzat Chimaev. It's a placeholder. It makes him some money. Maybe gets him some exposure. But it bumps up Chimaev a little bit. It devalues Nate a little bit. Dana, if you're listening to me, which you're probably not, smart move. Good matchmaking for you. That's smart business sense, guys. So the idea that people are, quote-unquote, criticizing him for that, it's the right move. You don't want a guy leaving your organization on a win. You want to bump up the guy who's going to stay here, which right now is Khamzat Chimaev. You want to bump up the guy who costs less money, which is right now Khamzat Chimaev. You want to bump up the guy as a potential contender, which is Khamzat Chimaev, not Nate Diaz. Like I said, what does a win for Nate Diaz over Khamzat Chimaev do for the UFC? Nothing. Nate doesn't suddenly become a contender at 170. Most of those guys beat his ass. I really believe that. Is he a contender at 155? Maybe if he gets some wins at 155. He hasn't fought there in forever. Forever. I don't consider him a 155-pounder anymore. So it's not like the UFC then goes, all right, now we have a world beater in Nate Diaz. They don't. None of the guys can fight for it. You know, put him against Colby Covington, he gets killed. Put him against Kamaru Usman, he gets killed. I think most of the elite at 170 beat him. In fact, I can't think of anybody who doesn't beat him. And that's not a knock on Nate Diaz. It's just, hey, man, you know, there's a reason he had his best years at 155. So it's just a sound business move for Dana White. So this idea that you know, and Dana White, you know, is the kind of person who generally feels attacked by a lot of things. It's not an attack at all. He's feeding Nate Diaz to Khamzat Chimaev to pump up Khamzat Chimaev and devalue Nate Diaz. Yeah, just like I would. If I were sitting in Dana White's chair, I don't want this guy leaving on a win. Give him a loss, pump up Chimaev. It's a big fight, as he just said. Sweet. Winning all the way around for me and my brand. And that's all he has to think about. I think it's the right thing to do is devalue Nate Diaz and pump up Khamzat Chimaev. And it's almost like he's denying making the smartest business move. People, when I talk about fighter pay, one thing I have consistently said on this show is any businessman in Dana White's shoes would do the same damn thing. You want to keep your expenses, your overhead, your payroll as low as possible. If someone will cut my lawn for $5, I'd be a fool to pay him $10. And that's how you have to see it. These are independent contractors, just like your gardener. Okay? Why doesn't he pay him this? Well, they're cutting the grass for $5. I'm not going to pay him $6. And anything else is just, you're not seeing things from a business perspective. You're not. The guy doesn't get paid to be a nice guy. He doesn't get paid to make friends. He doesn't get paid to, I don't know, whatever people say about fighters, you know, he's got to respect the game. He doesn't have to do any of that stuff. And nobody else would do anything different. The NFL would not pay, you know, or the teams themselves wouldn't pay Aaron Rodgers what they're paying him if they thought he'd work for any less. Or if they thought they could get somebody else for cheaper who was better. You pay as little as you possibly can to get somebody to do their job. Period. So this is another move, this Khamzat Chimaev Nate Diaz thing that I don't know what they're saying online about it. Or they're trashing him. That's the smart play, Dana. The smart play is Khamzat Chimaev beats up Nate Diaz. Nate Diaz leaves on 3 losses in a row. Khamzat Chimaev gets a bump in that a lot of fans will see him, I guess. A lot of fans would tune. It doesn't help him in terms of the rankings. It really wouldn't do anything for him. But fans will see him beat up Nate Diaz, which for some reason still has cachet. Beating Nick or Nate Diaz still has cachet. It shouldn't. Jesus. Nate has won, I think, twice at 170. It was Conor McGregor and Anthony Pettis, and they're both lightweights. He's never beaten a natural 170-pounder at 170 pounds. Ever. So, there's no ranking here. There's nothing important going on. Doesn't leap him forward in any meaningful way. But it's the smart move all the way around. So Dana shouldn't have to defend himself to anybody else, to a fan, right? To Robbie Fox, to anybody. It's the right business move. And that's all Dana White needs to think about. Unlocking the Cage with Jimmy Smith is part of the SiriusXM Podcast Network. The executive producer is Michael Russo. The associate producer is Kelly Murphy. Sound design by Nuri Balin. Andy King is director of sports podcasting for SiriusXM. Special thanks to SiriusXM's senior vice president of sports programming and podcasting, Steve Cohen, and SiriusXM Fight Nation program director, Marissa Rivas.
SiriusXM Podcasts.